another episode of Working with Purpose, a show dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We're glad you joined us today, and we're in this new series called the People Series. This series will continue on our path to advance a new image of leadership that's based upon the metaphor of the agile human body. We'll talk about that a lot today, instead of the rigid machine. I also want to let you know you can join our conversation at any time at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. You can also listen to all our podcasts and leave us a positive review on iTunes.
Only the positive ones.
Only the positive ones. That's right.
Keep the negative ones to yourself,
welcome
people.
Welcome Justin back. It's great to have you, Justin.
Hey, Dave. Good to be here.
Yep. So what we did last time was we talked about, and every other week we're actually going to tee up thinkers and authors and practitioners that Justin and I really feels are making an impact on where we're going today and on our themes. And the book we're talking about right now is called Firms of Endearment. The author's names, I won't get these right, but it's Raj Sisodia, it's Jag Sheth, and David Wolf. But last time we focused on that, because 2 weeks ago we did, we were asking this fundamental question, and that is, the new flavor of the week at the moment, right, is called conscious capitalism. And what our authors call that, they call this age right now the age of transcendence, which means that companies are now taking stakeholder relational management seriously. What does that mean? It means that they're looking at companies that take employees seriously, that take the environment seriously in the communities, that take seriously the vendors and suppliers, that take seriously, obviously, the investors, and it takes seriously what the vision of the company, all of that seriously. And they're looking at how they're performing. They're actually tuned in on that. And what they found out is that they're way outperforming the S&P 500, and they're also outperforming in the longer term the good to great companies. But here's the question we teed up last time, and that is this just the flavor of the month? Because we all remember in the 90s, the corporate social responsibility movement. And then, of course, about a year before Enron crashed, Enron won all those awards. So people are kind of going, well, what happened here? So we really looked last time at, is this really different? And we looked at the many forces that, in our opinion, especially interconnectivity, which is what we cover in this program, is making it really a mindset shift. We don't think this is the flavor of the month, okay? So we actually are going to argue, the authors have shown that they're just superior results with this mindset. But I wonder if there's any skepticism out there, Justin.
I'm sure there's not, Dave. I don't think it's controversial at all.
Yeah, right.
You know, you mentioned Enron, and you and I were talking about this, but I remember when they won all of those awards. You remember, you know, some of the door prizes that they got for that?
I don't remember.
They were paper shredders. And it was really convenient for what happened like a year later. Right?
That's ironic.
That was what was behind door number three. But how strange. I think there's some cynicism out there, and I think this topic is controversial and especially controversial if you've got that old paradigm of management and leadership in your brain, right? The notion that you can do both good for the bottom line as well as good for society and humanity in general.
Yes.
And, you know, this whole topic of there's no such thing as a free lunch is something that I think a lot of people just innately believe, is saying, hey, I've got enough problems figuring out how I'm going to get a return out of this business, let alone try to, you know, transcend or whatever it is, whatever that foofy stuff, Dave, you're selling. I don't know if I'm buying it. And you know, so, you know, should we really partner with vendors and suppliers, or can I just continue to squeeze them like I have to get pennies out of them and therefore it looks better on my bottom line? You know, do people actually care about the mission statement or purpose and values and stuff that we put on the walls? I mean, does that even matter? And that's the crux of our show today. We're going to be exploring these topics, and these authors around, again, this book, Firms of Endearment, have a lot of good things to say about this. So we'll unpack that further in this show. And just a note for our folks listening out there, too, we'll put this in the show notes so you can get access to the book and find out about the authors and even a better understanding of how to pronounce their names, because it is difficult. So we'll put that out there, too. Just wanted to let everyone
That's
know.
That's great, Justin. So right. Let's just dive in on the first one, shall we?
Yep.
So the first one is really looking at, if I pay more, not necessarily a lot more, but if I pay my employees better, if I train them more, right, and if I support them, I hire higher quality people consequently, is there any return on investment doing that, right? Mm-hmm. With the competition. So the authors take this challenge on. And what they do is they get very practical here, because there isn't any free lunches. And this is what they say, is that there are two spirals that companies can be in. One of them is called the negative employee spiral, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, right? And then we're going to go from there and go to the positive employee spiral. Because once you see these spirals, all of a sudden it makes sense what we're arguing here. So let's take the negative one first.
Yeah.
Get it out of the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, when people pay low wages and meager benefits, what it leads to is engagement, low engagement, and high turnover. In fact, low engagement actually has sabotagers. It's not just that they're not working, they're actually sabotaging. That's mm-hmm. what a lot of companies deal with, okay? And that in turn leads to lower days of productivity, because mm-hmm. people are coming and going, right?
Yeah.
Right? So you get that. That also leads to higher recruiting and training costs, because now you got to run that training thing five times as much as you did in another case, for example. And then that leads to lower revenue per customer and employee, mm-hmm. because you don't have employees that are in the game, excited, and also able with the training and skills they have to actually do a better job in whatever you're serving or product you're selling.
Right.
So that's the negative spiral. And, of course, that leads also to higher customer turnover,
mm-hmm.
because their experience is not as good, right? And they're turning over, and consequently, there's a lot of impact of going down that spiral.
You know, that doom loop kind of sounds like our producer, Dave. Every now and then I've noticed that my mic will get cut off,
or, I know.
You know, something changes in post that I'm like, hey, I said something different there. And
I know.
Right?
We should have a talk. We should get a raise for this guy.
Yeah, we really should.
I don't know how long it's been. If they paid him for every year he's been here, the guy'd be world class.
So yeah, we'll talk to management there. Neil. But in all seriousness, though, Dave, we are in a service economy, people tell me.
Yes,
and
we are.
Up to about 80% or so of the economy today is based on services, and that interface between employee and customer is extremely important. And if they're disgruntled because you don't pay them well enough or their benefits are bad, et cetera, that's only going to lead, like you said, to customer churn and to bad experiences. And really simply, it just comes down to doing it right the first time, mm-hmm. which is hiring people, you know, the right way, training them and compensating them fairly for the work that you're expecting them to do. And if you do that, then again, you get retention, and that retention, you get all the benefits that come with it. And I think that's where this the positive loop is going to go. But we're not going to unpack that until we remind people what we're doing here.
That's right. And by the way, that's where we get our huge salaries come, right?
They're extremely huge. They're very huge. We're rolling in it with this show. This is great. So, hey, a quick note to those of you that might have just joined us. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Visit us and join the conversation anytime at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective, or listen to our podcast and write us a positive review on iTunes. All right, Dave, enough of this negative stuff. Let's go positive, shall we? Okay.
All right, here we go.
Listen up, Neil.
These are companies that hire well, pay better. That doesn't mean extravagant. Pay better. They support their employees. They train them longer. Here's what happens. High pay, benefits, training, and support lead to higher quality,
mm-hmm.
higher service, higher productivity. So you get all three of those.
I like that. It's a hat trick.
It is. Just out of one shot. You get three, right? And that leads to higher customer satisfaction. In other words, your net promoter score, we'll get to that in a second, is high. So that gives you high repeat business, and it gives you high referral business. And I also might say it protects you. It's a loyalty program, because now even if the other person lowers their costs, I'm probably still going to stick with the person I was with before,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that comes with it. And that leads to higher profit levels, which leads to higher stockholder returns, which is exactly what they're arguing. So the positive spiral is, when you look at the picture of the two, you realize that this is not just isn't a free lunch, mm-hmm. because you really are. The ROI is huge,
right?
In the positive spiral,
right? Well, I think we should do that instead of the negative stuff.
I do too.
Yeah, that one sounds
you
better.
You picked up on the center point.
Yeah,
I'm really proud of you today, actually.
Thank you. So, everyone listening out there, take note of the positive ones and try to do those instead of the negative ones. Hey, a quote from Richard Branson I think is interesting, and I'm not sure where this is found in the Bible, but he said, "Train people well enough so that they can leave. Treat them well enough so they don't want to."
Yeah.
I like
stuff.
That a lot.
I do, too.
And again, I wish our producer would take notes of this, too. But again, it nails both sides of the coin. You know, this notion of training and what you put into, but also the surrounding environment and culture that's supportive. You need both of those.
Absolutely. So let's go to a little bit more about that, because what they're really saying is, let's not look at human resources as about resources.
Mm-hmm.
Because resources are stuff that usually are commoditized. You can interchange them easily, and you just use them up.
Right.
That's a human resource. They're arguing about it, call it the people department,
mm-hmm.
because it's a source.
Mm-hmm.
It's a source of talent, source of passion, source of skills being excellent. So consequently, when we get to that place, you get people that high talent, higher training, paid, you get excellence. Therefore, you get everything out of the source of all of this, which is people. It reminds me of the body image big time in the Bible. Okay, so the body, the eye cannot say to an ear, "I don't need you." Actually, they can't say it, but that's the image, right?
That's right.
And a hand cannot say, "I'm not needed," because all parts make up the whole together. And the authors put it this way. They said, emblematic of the scope of the cultural shifts taking place right now, in the early years of what they call the Age of Transcendence, people want to view their work as a calling. Outside the church, just in the culture, there's a calling. Something they were born to do. And that answer, higher needs. The business models that are inspirational in nature, right, and therefore also stakeholder resource management, helping customers have a better life and employees doing what they can do to improve society. So this whole, they're arguing there's just an entire movement, and I've seen that in the millennials big time, right, where this kind of thing is happening. So the season is right for that. So actually, we're going to take a break. No, we're going to talk about what we're going to do in the second
Let's
example.
Let's give people
here.
A little cliffhanger.
Let's do.
Okay.
So you want to do that? Want me to do that?
We're going to talk in the back half of the show. We have this, vendors and partners, right? We're going to tee up a second example around how vendors should be partners, but how a lot of businesses don't really treat them that way.
Right.
And we're going to unpack that, Dave, and see if we really should treat vendors as partners, or maybe if we should just keep squeezing them. So hang in there, folks.
There's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, so who knows where we're going to go with that. But we're going to be back in a minute discussing more pro tips from the authors of Firms of Endearment. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. We'll be right back.
Spiritual principles have become common in the workplace, whether or not managers and leaders acknowledge the source. It's a great time to be a Christian in business, and that's why Working with Purpose is bringing you this conversation. Working with Purpose is a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'd love to have you part of the discussion. You can dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com. Or find them on Twitter, at Stark Collective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose and will help you and your business go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. Find out more now by going to davidstarkcollective.com and open either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. Please visit us and join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com, on Twitter at Stark Collective, or you can listen to all our podcasts and write a review on iTunes. Okay, let's jump back in here, Justin. We're talking about the authors of the Firms of Endearment, and we're really looking at these three different examples of how stakeholder resource management, which means that I take seriously how I'm treating my employees, how I'm treating my vendors and suppliers, what I'm doing in the community and the environment, what I'm doing also with the investors. And they're arguing that all of that is actually the right way to go today. And we're asking the question, really? Mm-hmm. There's no free lunch. Mm-hmm. So we're actually looking at specific examples of why this is true, what it makes sense in business. And the second one we're going to look at right now has to do is viewing vendors as partners versus some of the traditional caricatures. So the traditional caricature we all know is this. Suppliers and vendors are people not to be trusted, basically, right? And they're totally dispensable, interchangeable, right, with any other supplier. So consequently, you're just going to exploit it. Mm-hmm. And I saw really good examples of this. I have a good friend who's owns a printing firm, and of course one of his big clients, they started to do reverse auctions online. And I watched these reverse auctions. That's basically saying you start with a price and everybody bids lower until somebody wins. It got to the place where they were losing money. But they wanted to take it just so they have another shot at this big supplier.
Well, right? Make it up in volume.
Right, yeah. If you lose 10 cents for this, you can lose 100 cents. Wild, right? Or the other example is that they'll just dictate. They'll commoditize. Now, when you do this, all the differentiating value of the vendors goes away. Because now they're just pricing, and they can't add their twists and turns that actually would make it a better product, a better service. Mm-hmm. So that's good examples of the caricatures. It's when your procurement department is only looking at how cheap is everything, mm-hmm. which is not really the value proposition of a lot of what you're doing. So that's the traditional way of looking at that whole thing, right? But now what they're going to talk about, though, is that it's really, let's look at the opposite. And this is their phrase, right? Collaboration is more profitable in an interconnected world than exploitation is. Collaboration is more profitable in an interconnected world than exploitation. So therefore, you view your partners as full partners, the vendors and suppliers, and nothing about, this is how they approach it. Rather than giving them a price or asking them to bid it lower, they say, nope, everything's up for discussion. We're going to negotiate everything in advance with our suppliers. All agreements are bidirectional. So there's input going both ways. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a win-win for both sides in these situations, right? And that allows suppliers and organizations they serve to have constant communication with each other. And this is really critical because both the suppliers and vendors might make recommendations to you about ways that you could be more productive or higher quality or even lower price, in your efficiencies. It goes the other way. Many times these firms of endearment will make suggestions to their vendors and suppliers about what they ought to be doing. I know, for example, another company in town who was working with Target, and Target would give them so much information about their stores that they could make it much cheaper than somebody else who's bidding because they knew exactly what was needed. And that's a way of Target actually reaching out to their vendors and suppliers in that way. So that's an example of that. And therefore, consequently, everybody's upping their game in connection with the partners and vendors and also the mothership. They're all making more profit. This has got the opportunity to, right? They've got their margins get higher, not lower this way, or potentially at least staying the same, right? And so what they're going to say is that kind of relationship with vendors and suppliers is really profitable relative to the other one.
Yep. Rising tide raises all boats.
That's it.
Right.
Yep.
And, this is especially important in in the service economy that we're in today as well. And honestly, we've talked about this in past shows, the show we did on give and take.
Yeah.
Right. What goes around comes around.
It does.
So, and especially in this day and age when, if you're treating suppliers or the vendor community poorly, that word gets around pretty quickly.
It does.
It's like water cooler talk now. Mm-hmm. We have the internet. People find out about things. And so if you're squeezing and pinching pennies out of everyone, pretty soon you're going to be left with a pretty dry well.
So I'll give you an example. I was working with this one company, and I was trying to figure out how everybody felt about them before we did purpose and values and stuff. And I began to talk to all their vendors. All their vendors simultaneously told me, we all know they keep squeezing us harder and harder and harder. Mm-hmm. So I have to go to the CEO and give the message. Your entire vendor base not only knows they're being squeezed, but they know that everybody else you're hiring is being squeezed. Mm-hmm. I suggest you deal with the vendor relationships, or maybe you won't have vendors.
Stop with the squeezing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you know what this leads to, Justin? It leads to, for the authors, different types of leadership. So how do you lead an organization where stakeholder resource management is the way of working. And what's interesting is their description of the type of leaders needed in traditional organizations, the one we describe as not acting in the ways we're talking about, traditional we've been calling it, versus those that are. Right. And so a really good example of this, of course, is Southwest Airlines. And Southwest Airlines versus all the other airlines, because they're so far ahead of everybody. They're the only profitable airline, at least the highest profitable airline over time, et cetera. And what they're saying is that because Southwest embraces this, they really have they have a type of leadership that's inclusive. It's the kind of leadership where they support and come alongside and help others, right? This is how they describe it directly. They are there to facilitate the success of others rather than their own. In fact, they will not give people raises or even promotions if they don't show this kind of leadership, right? And what it reminds me right away is of leadership in the Bible. When Peter talks about leadership of, you know, the body of Christ, he says this: be stewards of God's flocks that is under your care, watching over them, not because you must, but because you're willing, as God wants you to be, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve, not lording it over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you'll receive the crown of glory that never fade away. It's exactly the kind of leadership they're talking about.
I think the next passage was where Richard Branson stepped in.
I do, too.
I'm not exactly sure, but I think that's right.
I think that's where he is.
Hey, quick note again to those of you that might have joined us. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David and Justin. Visit us anytime. Join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. So, Dave, give us the third example here of what's cooking. We're on the home stretch.
And this has to do with the idea of passionate. Do purpose and value statements and helping them link to it. Does that really matter on the bottom line?
I don't know.
Really? Or is that just on the wall?
Like, I don't know.
Rather than on the bottom line?
I don't know.
And what the authors are saying is that you take – what happens is if people aren't connected to it, you've got a low-energy environment. And a low-energy environment, of course, means that they are not connected, they're not engaged, which happens another reason here. And from that, they really – the downward spiral of all that is that – you don't have people that are excited. So you end up, they're in fear, they're frustration, sorrow is kind of what they're feeling because there's apathy and inertia, rigidity, and cynicism. So that's the whole downward spiral.
Sounds like our producer again. I mean, I keep coming back to this. Okay, so tell us about the high energy one. Okay, so listen up here, Neil.
In high energy, people are emotionally and intellectually connected to the firm's purpose, vision, and values.
I like that
one of the
better.
Most important tasks of a leader, the authors argue, is to mobilize this energy. The most desirable energy is the passion zone, which is charted by high levels of positive energy. Employees of companies working out of this zone are full of enthusiasm and excitement and take palpable pride and joy in their work. It can be as simple as the illustration of stonecutter versus mansion builder. You know this story. Mm-hmm. So this guy shows up at Solomon's temple they're building, and he asks one guy who really seems to have low energy, rigidity, all that stuff. And he says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm cutting stones." It's pretty obvious what I'm doing. I'm cutting stones. Do this every day. It's just,
hey,
it's
buddy,
such a
just
drag.
Take a look here.
I'm cutting a stone cutter. Yeah. Right? And so they go, "Well, I don't want to be around this guy." So they go around, and there's another guy down the road a little bit, another part of the temple, and says, "Well, what do you do? What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm building a mansion, a temple."
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just a matter of vision. The guy's connected to the vision. He's connected to the purpose. Makes total difference. You can just see what that would mean in an organization.
Yep. My buddy Peter Drucker would talk about this too, right? My good friend Peter Drucker.
Yes, yes.
And we'll do a show
on
him.
We have to bring in Drucker,
we'll do a show on him. I can't swing a dead cat without thinking about Peter Drucker. But noted that organizational effectiveness and innovation usually is parallel with purpose, right? And he said charitable organizations do this well because they're filled with purpose. And I think that's a good tip for everyone out there, even if you're not a nonprofit, to kind of think about that in terms of how purpose can drive you.
Absolutely. Well, so much more these authors say and we could be saying about this whole idea, but I just want to parallel for a moment to realize that the firms of endearment stakeholder management is directly parallel to the five stewardships in the Bible we talk about as business, a biblical sense of business. And that is, stewardship means holding trust. And if you look at the scriptures aggregately, there are five trusts, of course, we're given from God, right? There's a trust of the vision, the trust of the money, the trust of the people, the trust of the vendors, suppliers, you know, and people around us, and the trust of the environment and the communities. And so this is exactly parallel with the biblical vision of how business is supposed to be anyway. And now we're actually seeing it proven out in an interconnected world, it's being proven out as the way we ought to be leading and the way we ought to be running our companies here. So I just want to say we're glad we joined us today as we're doing this series on people. And this is going to continue our path to advance the image of leadership based upon the metaphor of the human body. I hope you heard that a lot today, instead of the rigid machine. You've been listening today to Working with Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer, where we explore topics around this whole intersection of faith and business and through leadership in the body of Christ. Next week, we're going to have a guest speaker. We're actually going to have three women in a row coming up and every other week. Thanks again for joining us. As a reminder, you can join the conversation at davidstarkcollective.com. Find us on Twitter at Stark Collective. And don't forget to check out our podcasts on iTunes. For Justin Roy and David Stark, see you next week.